Hello and welcome to the discussion hour of a nationwide program on Radio Maria. I'm Gabriel Shadar with Hello and welcome to the discussion hour on Radio Maria. I'm Gabriel Shadar. With many conflicting views about whether the country is ready for elections, today I have a view from a researcher and analyst who believes the transitional government should not seek further extensions of the transitional period. Jan Pospisil spoke to me in the following exclusive interview. Please do not call. Jan Pospisil, this is another interview that I'm having with you regarding the article you have written and published, which is South Sudan's first elections won't be perfect, but another delay could be even riskier. Why did you start writing this and having a special interest in the issues of South Sudan peace agreement and election now when we are ending the transition?
I came to South Sudan first time in the last transition phase before it became even South Sudan in 2009. So I've seen South Sudan transition processes for quite a while now. And of course, when now elections come to the horizon again after now two transitional delays, it's a matter of great interest to me. I followed the political processes around the peace process basically since the agreement was signed, and even with ARCSIS before in 2015-16 in this short transition phase. So this is one of the main areas of my research, and I think I'm aware of the risk of having premature elections, especially in transitional contexts. We know this from quite a few countries globally. But I think in the particular situation now in South Sudan, it's would be really, really risky to opt for another extension. And I don't think actually another extension would be an option for the country. So when now the talk and the preparations for elections is taking up, I think it's an important moment now to consider what people should want, how also international actors should be advised, and how the country should move forward.
Your article is focusing on that another extension might be problematic. Why another extension might be problematic in your view?
There's two reasons for that. They're a bit different. The first reason, I think, and this is what we have seen in the extensions before, the argument is always that key tasks of the peace agreement have not been implemented. And with each extension we hear, but now we do it for real. Now these tasks will be really coming, and then we move on and go to these elections. But it has never happened. And I can't see by any means why now with another extension suddenly these tasks should indeed be implemented. On the other hand, I would argue that it's not absolutely necessary for these tasks to be completed before elections happen. A constitution could also be done, a constitution making could also be done after an election by an elected government, because it's basically a nationwide affair anyway. So we don't need a power sharing government for that. Transitional justice, the same element. Also, this could be done after. So there is several elements that could be easily postponed to after. So the argument that we need to complete the transition is not necessarily true. I would think it's just not going to happen. The task won't be implemented, even with another extension.
But you spoke about, everybody speak about this agreement came out because there are underlying political problems, and underlying political problems remain there. How do you feel about it?
Of course they are there, but they won't be resolved in an extension. I would argue, and this is the second point why I think the elections are necessary, that the main political challenge the country might face is an unplanned disruption to this process. And an unplanned disruption to this process would be mainly if the president, for whatever reasons, is not able to continue his presidency. This is something we will have to face over the next years, if we like it or not. This is coming to us. And this is something which the current transitional framework probably cannot resolve, as well as the SPLM in the current context cannot easily resolve. So here, there needs to be a clear plan for a succession at the level of the presidency in case. And my view is that these elections would force the SPLM to settle this issue, because if there should be presidential elections, Salva Kiir as a presidential candidate has already confirmed he intends to run, but there needs to be an agreed vice presidential candidate as a running mate that would be in case then also accepted as a potential successor. And I think this is an incredibly important element that people tend to forget here.
And what about the other players? If you are talking about the SPLM alone, and the conflict involves many parties, and there are many party signatories to the agreement, what would be their position and what would be their options for them?
The option for them is in various sections. We must not forget, first and foremost, based on survey data we have collected over the last 5-6 years, that there is no credible opposition party that could challenge the SPLM in elections, not even without any rigging in free and fair elections. Even SPLM-IO under Machar would hardly get 20% of the votes and could not challenge SPLM, which is nationwide, I would think, at about 50%, which is not a glorious result, but stable enough to win at the national level. What others could do and can do, and this is where the chances in elections are, that there is a lot of potential at sub-national level. SPLM-IO, if they would run with credible candidates, and I'm not talking about some splinter factions here, this needs to be credible candidates in their constituencies, they would have the chance to get at least 2 governor positions, if not more. And if not, they would probably lose it because of rigging. So there would then be a strong claim on their end that would even help them. Others would have the chance as well in counties, at also in particular political constituencies, to win. So it's not that it's a clean sweep, because as you remember the election system, it's on the one hand 50% party lists, but 50% is also first past the post. And there's people in the opposition, very popular in some political constituencies, they would have probably no trouble in winning. Here, of course, then the credibility of the elections, rigging, violence becomes issues, but they would have chances. But I understand that their position, of course, is that in this transitional power sharing framework, their position of many of these people is much stronger and they can get a lot more out. But this is not a good argument for continuing the transition.
So you're saying the opposition might not get more than what they have now in the transitional period. They cannot get more than what they have now in election.
Well, the elections would come about with a systems change, and nobody will have more after than they have now. You must not forget that the parliament at the moment is 500-something people. After the elections, it will be 324, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So even the SPLM proper would lose quite a lot of positions after elections. But this is necessary. You can't prolong a system with 5 vice presidents that is power shared throughout within an incredible amount of positions that have no real value, but just basically feed people who are happy to basically get something out of this framework. This makes no sense politically. Everybody loses in absolute terms, but some might win relatively. And what the main issue is, from where I sit, the system itself would gain a lot of credibility.
Yes, Jan Pospisil, you speak about the issue of unpreparedness. You spoke earlier about the issue of violence. Let's see about the institutional structures and preparedness of the institutions that are supposed to make this election fair, credible, and free.
Well, there are several institutions that are working. The National Election Commission has meanwhile replicated its offices to all the states. In some states it's better, in some states it's worse, but it's in essence The NEC does a very good job in preparing. And I'm aware that there's plans for further procurement for the registration. The main issue here, of course, is money. The last 6 million they got is at least a symbol, but it's not closely enough to what is needed for the elections. Political Parties Council has now closed the registrations. There's still issues because SPLM.io proper has not registered even in the timeline. These are things that can be politically negotiated. There's also preparedness efforts going on in the security services. I know that the National Police Service is preparing and has plans that are also followed at the state and county level. So there is things going on. It's not that nothing happens. But the main issue here is resources. There will be loads of resources necessary. What is necessary is kind of getting all the ballot boxes, printing the ballot sheets, doing the registration, which needs equipment as well. This is not for free. And in the end, it will be on the elites. We know, and this is the standpoint of the international supporters that I understand, there is enough money in this country. And it will be on the leadership to make clear they are willing to go for elections and they are willing to fund it. I personally have perspective with international partners that ask, why would we fund elections when we know that so much money in this country vanishes into a huge void of we don't know where it's going. We know in a way where it's ending up, but this money could also be used by the same people, basically, to be invested into elections. So this is a perspective I see. And when we come to political will, it will be something of these people if they are willing to get this money into state budget and then from the budget into National Election Commission and other institutions that work on the preparedness for these elections.
Yes, you mentioned the current election law. You said it is flawed and it is giving more than the 100% percentage of seats.
There's technical issues here that is the National Election Commission knows this and others, even the president is aware of this. The problem is that there needs to be, first of all, a constitutional amendment of the transitional constitution to be brought in line with an election act that also needs to be amended again to be even workable. The problem here is that when you remember when the Election Amendment Act was passed in the third reading in the TNLA, that some last minute changes were introduced that are actually flawed. They're just not correctly done. One of these is, as I've said and written in the article and you said just now, that 105% of the parliamentary seats are actually provided for, because we have, in a way, 50% party lists in a particular system, 50% provided by first past the post, and then 5% presidential prerogative. I'm not saying that this 5% presidential prerogative of like naming people into the TNLA doesn't make sense. It could make sense. For instance, that there would be unsuccessful presidential candidate that is still very important politically. Why should he not come to parliament? And these 5% would provide for this person then named by the president to enter parliament as perhaps the head of the opposition. So in itself, it would make sense. But this needs to be configured in a way it works out. There's also the decision by the Election Commission, which had procedural issues also, to use the political constituencies from the 2010 elections. But they are not enough to provide for the seats foreseen by the National Election Act. So there is a discrepancy. I don't have the numbers completely in my head, but I think it's about 30 seats, if not more, might go up to actually 50 seats that are not provided for at the moment in the first past the post system. So these things need to be clarified in order to move forward. There's also other issues that, I mean, to be fair, I would even argue that a staging of elections might be free to consider. For two reasons, mainly first, people will struggle if they get 8 or 9 different ballot sheets in front of them to vote for different entities of executive and legislative. This is, in every country, this would be a challenge. And secondly, if there would be, for instance, a staging between executive elections and legislative elections, the executive elections could be used as a method of voter registration. This has happened in other African countries. And then the voter lists coming from the executive elections could be used when voting for the different parliaments and legislative bodies. But these are just technical issues. At the moment, everything goes for general elections, which is, of course, fine. But then these obstacles need to be removed and the funding needs to be there as well.
Jan Vespasilius spoke about unfinished business, and you argue that the trusts in the 2018 peace agreement will never be completed. And why are you saying this?
There is a common misunderstanding about the 2018 agreement, which is in a way that it would be failing the whole time. I would argue, in contrast, that it was working far too well. It provided political figures without any democratic legitimization, a tool to drag resources, to basically steal whatever they could out of the state resources from an official position they've never been elected in. So there is, what this peace agreement does is taking accountability away from the whole political system. And in that sense, since basically most of the people, also of the opposition, you must not forget, have their positions based on this agreement. I would even argue, you know, even when you look at the arguments that the SPLMO around Dr. Riak has at the moment, they would like to return to this peace agreement. And of course they would, because, you know, after elections, they would be in a politically much weaker position than they are with this agreement. So this makes it a bit difficult. Everybody, the accountability is just not there. And since this accountability is not there, by agreement in a way, this agreement works actually not, it's not failing, but it works far too well, which is the reason actually why this transition needs to end.
Yeah, a very interesting point there that you have mentioned. And so the tasks are too ideal to be completed, as there are beneficiaries from these.
Yeah, no, it's first of all, I mean, of course, nobody has a real interest to implement this because everybody loves this transition. But the problem is also that this agreement was, of course, in the way it was drafted, far too ambitious. It was, but we have this in most peace agreements on the planet. I've spent years of my life comparing peace agreements across the planet, and all of them, literally all of them, assume things that will never happen, which is that everything is written there. It never happens, never on the planet. That after this agreement, there will be elections and a return to normal politics. Never happened on the planet. So in a way, South Sudan is not particular. It's not a particular failure of the South Sudanese system. It's just not how peace agreements work. And I think this is also something that people tend to forget. Of course, from the outset, it was clear that not all provisions in this peace agreement will be implemented. It's a political process we have here, and we have to think about a transition as a political process and not as an implementation agenda, because this is not how things work. We're talking about politics and not technicalities here. And we talk about a conflict that is not resolved by this peace agreement, but enshrined by this peace agreement, because the same fault lines of the civil war now keep people along their particular positions in this power sharing framework. So how should this ever be resolved? The peace agreement is not the right instrument to resolve the political problems and tensions of South Sudan. That has to be very clear.
Mm-hmm. And your argument is that any extension, we are talking about 1 to 2 year extension, is not going to solve any of the problems that were created in the beginning.
If I had to bet money and there would be an extension, I would bet all my money on that we afterwards see the exact same situation that we have now. I don't see any implementation happening that hasn't happened so far because we extended for 1 or 2 more years. So the decision we have to take is, do we want to work with this now, or we want to just push the problem down the road? And here the problem is that the chances of an unplanned disruption at the presidency level or other levels become much higher the longer we prolong this.
And then for the citizens, that is an unfavorable condition.
The problem here is that there's two things to consider. And the first thing, when we do our survey, the overwhelming majority of South Sudanese want to vote. The overwhelming majority of opposition, people leaning towards the opposition, aren't opposition in South Sudan. They want to vote. The overwhelming majority of people who expect a high level of election violence still want to vote. And we have to be careful here, especially from internationals or I hear observers warning about the election violence. I heard like an expert speaking yesterday in Kenyan TV about all the risks. But also, who are we as external, like even me as an external expert or South Sudanese experts, to know better what South Sudanese should want than them themselves? People want to vote, and it's their right to vote if they want to. This is a very strong ethical point, I think, behind here. In a way, when we want to give people what they want, let them have their elections, and we would hope that the question of legitimacy and especially then accountability would go and would go up. Because now, I mean, when you look at some of the long-serving ministers, I remember one of the ministers who has never been voted in any position saying that basically we are a government by the grace of God and we are here as long as God wants us here. When I remember such sayings, I mean, this has no accountability whatsoever. And what does this say towards the South Sudanese citizens that are across the country and have never a chance to vote on this minister or hold him accountable in any kind of way?
And Jan Pesposil, as we are coming to the last few minutes, extensions are not good. And extensions in the case of South Sudan are not going to resolve the problems that were created in the beginning. People want to vote, and it is not for anybody who can claim that they have the right to dictate on the people what they want. If they said they want to vote, that we must allow them to vote. Now, what should happen? What should happen? You have the peace agreement, you have the preparations, you have international community pushing for the processes to be like fair and free and all that kind of things. You have the economic crisis. We have an economic meltdown here, despite you saying that there is a lot of money in the country. And you have conflicts, subnational conflict, which we call communal conflict, part of which or some of which are not related to politics, but they are our underlying politics. So you have a long transition, but you also you're proposing something very short and interim, just to clear the cloud, if I can say, for a better preparation. What are you saying here?
I'm saying first and foremost that the elections are not going to resolve most of the things that you are highlighting here. They never could, and they couldn't in any other country. That's not what elections are for, to resolve like all the conflict that is around, to resolve an economic crisis. That's not for elections to do. This would be just a complete naive idea about what can happen here. The only thing that I'm saying is two things. We extend and nothing will change, number one. And number two, and this is the real risk, not having these elections soon and not having an agreement on a vice president who is accepted by the ruling party to take over, risks of bringing this country in a much bigger war situation than it is now with the communal conflicts on the one hand, when we talk about Barghazal, or political communal conflicts we see in Great Upper Nile and other parts of the country. This could be much worse than that. And I would see a fight, an open infight about the succession of the current president as probably the biggest risk the country has to face. And it's a much bigger risk than the current problems between SPLM and the SPLM-AO mainstream faction or the communal conflict happening in Barghazal. This is all, I agree that this is all kind of connected, but I would be concerned that this can be much worse. And this is something where elections might have a role to play in preventing this from disrupting completely. But on the other hand, of course, the election cannot solve the economic crisis. The elections cannot resolve the corruption issues that are around. They can help at least a bit because politicians might have explained their roles better now to people if there is a campaigning. But of course, they are not resolving all these issues.
Mm. And as we conclude the the elite and the politician, in as we call them, in the country, what kind of an introspection they need to do so that they make a wiser decision around the transition?
The problem we have, and this is what this peace agreement in a way incentivizes, is that everybody looks at their own short-term interests. The permanent rolling doors, revolving doors about dismissals and reappointments, this doesn't help, because this also reinforces this. In a way, the president had a point when he said, you know what, we have to move forward. This cannot go on forever like this. And everybody must go behind this. In a way, I believe there's something genuine there, that the president knows that this system he is currently presiding upon is not gonna be last forever, and it's not helping the country in any kind of way. There is, of course, people in very powerful ministerial positions who see this very, very differently, and do everything probably to obstruct this. The main issue here would be to look beyond individual interests. But, you know, there is a structural problem here. If people are just used over now much more than a decade just to loot all the resources they get in their hands, it's very difficult to change these patterns from today to tomorrow. It's just a very, very unfortunate situation. And the peace agreement, unfortunately, has helped to create this situation.
Thank you very much, Jan Pasposil. And this is a very interesting interview you are giving to Radio Maria once again. And I hope to hear from you again. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And that was the interview with the researcher Jan Pasposil. And he has been giving a very interesting insight into the issues of transition in South Sudan, and he has written and authored an article mentioned on the Conversation website, which is titled South Sudan's First Elections Won't Be Perfect, But Another Delay Would Be Even Riskier. Thank you very much for being with us, and that's from me, Gabriel Shadar, on Nationwide on Radio Maria. Thank you very much.